www.wmnf.org. This is WMNF Tampa.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
I know you like that. All right, welcome back to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. This is your host Joshua on the Urban Cafe, and Jamal in the studio, and Dr. Marquita Wills on the line. How you doing, doctor?
Hello. So happy to be here this morning. Thanks for having me.
That's great. We love having you. And so we are talking about grief in the time of COVID, but also just grief in general. You can call us at 813-239-9663 to participate in this conversation and literally ask, you know, a Harvard-trained physician on managing mental health and grief. Now, doctor, big part of our conversation managing grief has been around death. But you from the very onset of the conversation this morning, you've mentioned that grief is not just death, right? There's divorce, there's other items that can potentially cause grief. And so can we explore those a little bit more so people can understand it and recognize it?
Sure. So, you know, oftentimes, for example, divorce, you know, a loss, a profound loss of a primary relationship or a shift in what that relationship ends up being can bring about significant feelings of grief. As you sort of process through those emotional changes and untether from the vision of kind of what was and what you had expected things to be. So that's a very big loss. And oftentimes people have to grieve that loss. Unexpected employment. Unemployment can sometimes cause significant grief. Our identities are really, really wrapped up into how we produce and our productivity. And so, job loss can be destabilizing, and people can go through a significant grief process there. Health status, as people, if someone develops a chronic illness, and they're limited in what they can do. There's a huge grief process of former functioning. I have a cousin who had a spinal cord injury and became a paraplegic. There was a significant grief process of his life, how it had been, and adjusting to a new normal. So the concept of grief is one that we can apply to many life elements and life variables, not just death. Those same concepts of loss apply. That's how we think about grief in other contexts as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Wills. Quick question about are there any like stages to grief? Because, I mean, you know, you're not just it's not just something happens and you're whether depressed or if you're upset right away. Like, how does this whole process work?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question. There's a very popular framework that had been put out by a social psychologist talking about sort of the stages of grief. It's called the Kather-Ross model. And it's normally known as the five stages of grief. It was introduced in 1969 on a book called On Death and Dying. And people have really kind of clung to this framework. And here are what they talk about as the five stages of grief. Number one, denial, that initially people are denial. Number two, anger. Number three, bargaining. Number four, depression, and then number five, acceptance. And this theory holds that the stages are part of a framework that helps people to learn to live without what they have lost. Now, I think it's just a framework. I'm not tied to this framework, it doesn't necessarily, it's not empirically supported. It's just a framework, a theoretical framework, but it does help some people sort of think about what what different feelings might come up as they're dealing with death and dying. Again, it's not like there's a blood test that says, you know, you are in the depression phase, you are in the anger phase, mm-hmm. you are in the acceptance phase, and it kind of rotates around as well. So, you know, you may go back and forth. But those are all valid feelings that people may have in upon hearing that someone is either passed away or that they're in the process of passing away.
Okay.
So thank you very much for asking that question.
Okay, yeah, definitely. And to go along with that, I didn't know, like, because we could have some people, you know, listeners, watchers on Facebook who are going through some of these phases now. And one you said was bargaining, and I said, "Huh." That I was like, "I don't understand that."
Yeah, can you dive into bargaining? What does that mean?
Yes, and I'm not an expert on this particular framework, so I'll do my best. But it's like, well, you know, if you don't take away my loved one, I'll do this.
Oh, or, interesting.
If you do take away my loved one, I'll do that. So trying to kind of have some power in it. And say, well, I won't feel bad, and I will feel bad, and that sort of thing. So that's what that term is sort of meant to signify, that we go through a rationalization process in our mind about it.
Interesting.
Are you still there, doctor?
I am. Oh, okay. I'm here.
Yeah. So I think that, so that's very important. Again, for our listeners out there, you're listening to The Urban Cafe. We have Dr. Marquita Wills on talking about grief. We just covered the five stages of grief as known by the Kubler-Ross model: in denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And, you know, I think it's – when I think about it personally and how I've managed grief, you know, I can definitely see those five stages, right, in that process, right? And so it's very important for you to kind of – accept the grief, right? And so, doctor, question for you, you know, how can you get to that point where you're just like, okay, it's all right to grieve, it's all right to cry, it's all right to express my emotions?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought crying up, because that's a question that comes up a lot of times when people are talking about grief, is it okay to cry? And particularly with men, you know, is it okay to cry when someone's lost? And many times, you know, that may be like a death of a parent of a male, may be the first time that a spouse or a child of a male has ever seen their father or husband crying. So, you know, crying is an absolutely positively normal response to death and dying, both for men and women. It is a healthy response, both for men and women. When we cry, we release stress hormones, and so there is sort of a physiologic release that's associated with crying as well. And so I get that question a lot around death and dying. Is crying a normal part of it? And it absolutely positively is. Another question that I get a lot of is it normal to have experiences of feeling and being with and knowing and dreaming about the person who has recently passed away? Should someone be worried if they're saying, I saw my loved one, or my loved one came to me, or my loved one came to me in a dream? And in our society, that is a very, very normal, and in fact, I would even go so far as to say healthy, response to death and dying. It is it's unknown if it's actual or real, so there's no way to know. But when people come to me and say, hey, my loved one said that our mother came to them in while they were relaxing or while they were cooking, I say, okay, just deal with it. Just accept that. That's okay. That's their experience. And so that's something that is pretty normal and pretty typical. So that's another way that people process and deal with it.
You know, that's very fascinating. And I love that idea of accepting how other people grieve, right? Because grief is very unique to each person, how everybody manages it, right? So kind of accepting how that person, maybe that person is just quiet, maybe that person's loud, maybe that person is retrospective, right? Or maybe that person, to your point, had a dream about somebody visiting them, right? And I think it's important for us, those around those who are grieving, to be accepting of that person's grieving process.
And then my question with that is,
this is Jamal, to what point or to what extent do you not get involved with someone's grieving or get involved with someone's grieving if it, you know, starts affecting things like on the external level? Like, for example, like I don't know what, if there is, maybe there's not a set acceptable grieving process. Like, for example, if a mother has kids, right, and she's grieving and she's like, well, I want someone else to help take care of my kids for a while. Or someone says, oh, I don't want to go to work for a while. Mm-hmm. Well, then how long is too long? You know, if there's a typical period you could get off, maybe if you lose, let's say, a parent a week or two at work. But then what if I want 6 months and my employer's like, I just wonder about some of those things. If you could kind of touch on those, like how to deal with those situations, because I think one thing about grieving is that we do it internally and people will see it manifest externally. But if it starts manifesting externally and starts affecting others to an extent, I think that would that make grieving a problem then? Or
that's fascinating. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're hitting on something very, very important. Very, very important. And that's when normal grieving turns into what we call complicated grief. So there's a normal grieving expectation, as we talked about, it's societally bound, it's culturally bound, it's family bound.
It's FMLA bound.
FMLA bound. Wow. So there's a normal grieving process that we all have. But then some people, Jamal, end up having what then does become a diagnosable mental condition, and that is complicated grief. So complicated grief is when someone has passed away, and for whatever reason, the person just can't get through it. And it's called complicated grief disorder, and it is a diagnosable condition. It is what we call, we've been talking about sort of normal responses to grief. This is what we would call sort of an excessive response to grief. And so it turns out to be longer-term dysfunction. And so they are, you know, 6 months or beyond, you know, more normal grieving, you know, intense grieving is probably usually a six to 12 month experience. If people start pushing out past 6 months, past 12 months, then you're starting to say, okay, wait a minute, this isn't right, because we as humans generally can rebound from that. But if someone just gets stuck in their grief, and they're, you know, neglecting their household functions, they're neglecting their duties at work, they're neglecting their, you know, extracurricular activities that they're involved in and hobbies, and they've actually gone over into the edge. So you wouldn't say that the death precipitated it, but that person needs help. That person needs help. That person needs the help of a mental health professional to get it back together. Because there's normal grief, and that's what we've been talking about the majority of this show. But then there's abnormal grief. And I'm glad you hit on that.
And so, doctor, who do you contact in those cases? Like, I actually know somebody who's going through this prolonged grief.
Then I would go ahead and contact a therapist, or a pastor. You know, a pastor is a good segue.
Or Dr. Wills.
Yep.
They can contact you.
Oh, no, no.
Oh,
I'm
no.
A clinic.
Oh, I see.
I don't have a clinic.
Okay.
I'm not seeing anybody. Thank you, though, for helping me build a practice, but I don't have one.
Well, you know you would have one if you wanted to.
Okay.
And so, so I agree, and I know you, Doctor, mentioned a lot the national NAMI, right? The National Association of Mental Illness, and it's just this is a very, very fascinating conversation. Just much more nuanced and complex than I would have thought about, you know, myself. And so, I really appreciate you bringing these kind of topics to our show. Now, regarding some of that professional support, so, you know, there's psychologists, psychiatrists, grief counselors, right? So, you know, when would you know who is best to go to?
So there are, you know, one of the things that I love hospice for, hospice does a really great job of supporting families through transition. A hospice can really, really help with that. That's a good first place to go if you are having problems and want to access support groups. Hospices have support groups. And then also cancer hospitals oftentimes have really good support groups on death and dying as well. And we're lucky and fortunate to have a premier cancer center here in Tampa. And so if you know, those are good places to say, hey, I need to go to a support group on death and dying. And oftentimes hospices and cancer hospitals will have a great infrastructure built around helping people process. And support groups are great, both in person and virtual ones. Virtual ones are good now too.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those are facilitated by professionals, and sometimes those are just peers. And so that's good too. I always recommend support groups, bereavement support groups, particularly if someone has had a child who has passed away and they're having a hard time, because that's a really, really tough death. And then a suicide, we talked about suicide before. Suicides are very hard for families to process too. And so I always encourage families who have been impacted by suicide to think about a support group or a bereavement group that can help just process feelings and help get through. And help you realize that there are other people who are processing through death as well.
Yeah, that's great. So a lot of different resources for you to go to. You know, I there's actually a show on Netflix. Doctor, I don't know if you've seen this show. It's called Afterlife. Ricky Gervais, he's a comedian.
No, I haven't.
And so he's a famous British comedian. He did the original Office, The Office, in for BBC. And he plays in this Netflix series. He plays basically he lost his wife to breast cancer, and the whole show is about him grieving. And he's very angry, right? And it's a natural sentiment, and he kind of lashes out at people verbally, right, who are trying to help him. You know, how, as both from the perspective of someone who's grieving and someone who's trying to help someone who's grieving, when it comes to that anger, what's the best way to manage that?
Yeah, make room for it, acknowledge it, normalize it, let them know that that angry feeling is a valid feeling. Don't try to stuff it. Don't try to have the person stuff it. Show them, you know, let them know that that anger and that resentment is one of the five stages of the grief that we talked about. Validate it, and then help them move past it by helping them get to other phases of acceptance. Because ultimately, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to be able to let that person know that the loss, that person is still, the memories are still there. They can hold on to those memories. They can create new rituals to honor that person. They can come up with new ways to continue to celebrate the life of that person. They can, you know, make special moments on that person's birthday, on that person's anniversary of their death, or any other special day, and create new memories and move on. And move on, because that's the thing that we want everybody to integrate and accept those deaths and move forward eventually. And it takes time. It takes time. Giving people the room and the space to grieve takes time. But we want to be able to help all of our friends and loved ones get through that process.
And I have a real quick question before we close out the show. any suggestions on grieving if someone, let's say, has like their spouse passed away, they're older, and like they have no kids, it was just them?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. And, you know, when they're older and their spouse passes away and they have no children, one of the things you really have to worry about then is social isolation. Isolation is really tough. It's anecdotal, but I think some literature does support people kind of dying of heartbreak. When one spouse dies, shortly thereafter, the next spouse dies, be with them, I guess. But, you know, creating that community and finding ways to stay connected with others, definitely hard in COVID, not a substitute, but I always believe in pet therapy, you know, getting a pet. It can be really helpful and supportive around that time. It doesn't take the place of the person, but it's also been shown to help prolong lives, having a pet. Making sure that person stays connected and has a connection to others is critical. It's a great question.
All right, and Doctor, we're wrapping up the segment here today. Do you have any parting words for our listeners out there who've been listening to this great topic?
The one thing that I just would like to end on is by saying that, you know, death is universal. Everyone dies, but not everyone really lives. So that's an unknown quote. So make sure that we're all, and Billy touched on this in his question, making the best of this life that we have. And then also the last thing that I just want to end on is death is not the opposite of life, but rather a part of it. And so we got to be thoughtful and mindful and deliberate and intentional about how we think about death and grieving, and particularly during this time of COVID when we're dealing with a lot of it in unique ways. Let's keep these kinds of conversations going.
All right, fantastic. So there you have it, Dr. Marquita Wills, in our monthly mental health show here on the Urban Cafe. We were talking about grief and how to manage grief. Thank you so much, Doctor, as always, for tuning in. We'll have you again next month in November. Can you believe it's almost the end of the year already?
Can't believe it.
It's crazy. And so there you have it. Thank you so much, Doctor. We really appreciate it, as always. You have a great one.
Bye, you guys.
And so that was Dr. Marquita Wills on the Urban Cafe. Just great topic about grief, managing grief. Go out there, look up information on NAMI, find a support group if you, or outside of your family and friends if you need to, and do what you need to do to get well, because life does go on. You need to live life to its fullest.
Yeah, that's very important because so many different things are going to happen to us in our lives, and we have to react to them. We're going to react certain ways, you know. We don't know if it's necessarily the right reaction, the wrong reaction, good, bad, but we react, and we have to be able to react and be able to continue on with our lives.
Mm-hmm. We have to live, We're more resilient than when we think we are. So.
That's true.
All right, and this my last get out there vote. Registration has already ended, but you can still vote early if you're already registered. Early voting starts tomorrow through November 1st, and then Election Day on November 3rd. You've been listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. Thank you so much for tuning in.